Chapter 33. Madagascar, Indian Ocean. They took their time on the way out, pausing first in the grotto, then repeating Sam's peak through the cascade before sliding on their bellies through the boulders and into the lagoon. They stroked across to the beach and climbed from the water. While Remy wrung the water from her hair, Sam took off his boots and drained them. Leaning forward, her head tilted to one side, Remy murmured to Sam, "There's someone waving at us." "Where?" Remy pointed with her eyes toward what looked like a pile of undergrowth from which was jutting a hand and forearm. The hand was holding a Webley Model Mark VI. It gesticulated wildly, as though trying to warn them away. Sam put his hand on the butt of the Webley in his waistband. Crack! A bullet thumped into the sand between his legs. Sam froze, as did Remy, her hands still tangled in her hair. At the pile of undergrowth, the kid's arm slowly withdrew into cover.
"Guess they doubled back," Remy observed.
"Seems so. Did you happen to read the manners and etiquette section of the Madagascar guide?"
"I thought you did that."
"Skimmed it." Slowly Sam raised his hands above his head and turned around. Remy did the same. Predictably, standing above the waterfall atop the lion's head were the six rebels. Standing near the ledge, arms akimbo, the leader called down, "No move! Understand? No move!" Sam nodded, called back, "No move!" Under the watchful eye of the lone sniper atop the lion's head, the other five rebels made their way down via some unseen trail in the rocks. Soon they were standing in a semicircle around Sam and Remy. The leader stepped forward, scrutinized Sam's eyes, then glanced over and gave Remy a foot-to-head once-over. The leader reached out, plucked the Webley from Sam's waistband, then lifted it up for examination.
"Good gun," he proclaimed in his broken English.
"Good gun," Sam agreed.
"You are who?"
"Sam."
"Tolotra. Who is woman?"
A bit of Madagascar etiquette popped into Sam's head. Carefully, he lowered his right hand and pointed to Remy, careful to keep the tip of his index finger curled back toward himself.
"My wife, Remy."
Sam's gesture was not lost on Tolotra. He looked at Remy, then back to Sam, then nodded thoughtfully. Tolotra's next statement told Sam that his recognition of a Madagascar custom wasn't going to be a get-out-of-jail-free card.
"Sam, Remy,
hostages now."
One of the rebels drew two lengths of rope from his belt and stepped forward as if to bind Sam and Remy's hands. Tolotra waved the man off and said to Sam,
"You run, we shoot. No run. You promise?"
Evidently, Sam's bent index finger had done some good. In response, Sam raised his right hand up, ceremoniously crossed his index and middle fingers, then nodded solemnly. "Not on your life," he said. Beside him, Remy rolled her eyes.
"Oh, God."
Tolotra studied Sam's gesture for a moment, then smiled and mimicked him.
"Not on your life."
Tolotra turned and showed the gesture to his men.
"Not on your life. Not on your life,"
the men cheered back. Remy whispered, "If any one of them has an English phrase book, we're dead. You know that, don't you?" They were placed in the middle of a well-staggered, single-file group and marched away from the lagoon, passing within 5 feet of the kid's hiding place before turning onto a trail that paralleled the river. Whatever language advantage Sam and Remy might have had was offset by the bandits' hostage-wrangling skills. They were never under the guns of fewer than two men who always maintained a minimum 10-foot gap. Moreover, the group's navigation skills were on par with those of the kids, and soon Sam and Remy had lost whatever landmarks to which they'd been clinging. After walking for 40 minutes, the jungle thinned and the trail broke into sunlight. They were back on the savanna, Sam realized,
But how far from the one he, Remy, and the kid had used earlier that day, he had no clue. The ocean was on their left, the forested escarpment on their right. They were heading south. After another 20 minutes, they were back in the jungle, this time following a fairly straight trail, so Sam was able to maintain his bearings. "I think we're near the road," he whispered to Remy. "That's probably how they found us. They found the rover. Have you seen you-know-who?" "No, but he's out there."
Walking at the head of the line, Tolotra turned around and barked, "No talking!" He held up his crossed fingers as if to lend gravity to the order. Sam returned the gesture.
Remy murmured, "How nice. You made a friend."
"Hope I don't have to shoot him."
"With what? An invisible rubber band gun?"
"No. My Webley," Sam grumbled, his eyes fixed on Tolotra. "After I take it away from him."
"No talking!"
Sam's guess about their location was right. A few minutes later, Tolotra reached an intersection of trails and turned right. The grade increased until they were pulling themselves up using exposed roots and low-hanging branches. The terrain had no effect on the bandits' discipline, however. Whenever Sam and Remy looked around, they found themselves staring down at least 2 rifle muzzles. The trail leveled out and reached a set of natural root steps in the hillside. Sam and Remy reached the top and found themselves standing on a gravel road. A quarter mile to the south, a rusted white Chevy pickup truck sat on the shoulder. Ahead of it, Sam and Remy's Range Rover. And looming above both, the 3 wise men.
"Where now?" Sam asked Tolotra.
He and Remy were under no illusions. While their hands being unbound was an advantage, this was not a Hollywood movie. Without a major distraction, any attempt to get the jump on any of these rebels would not only fail, but likely end with them dying. Their chances would only worsen once they were put in vehicles.
"Secret place," Tolotra replied.
"You want ransom, yes?"
"Yes."
"How do you know we're worth anything?" Tolotra considered this for a moment as though sorting through his grasp of English.
"Packs, clothes, camera, all expensive. Car, expensive."
"It's a rental," Remy said.
"Huh?"
"Nothing."
Sam, still trusting his hunch that the kid hadn't abandoned them, had been surreptitiously scanning their surroundings. Now, out of the corner of his eye, he glimpsed movement on the slope above the road. He saw a flash of silvery hair appear between a pair of boulders.
Sam said, "We have gold."
This had the desired effect. Those in the group that hadn't been paying attention to the conversation turned to face Sam. Tolotra took a step closer.
"Gold? Where? How much?"
The kid's head popped up from behind the boulder. He caught Sam's eye, winked, pointed toward the vehicles down the road, then ducked from view again. Sam looked to Remy. Her expression told him she'd seen the kid. Sam said,
"How much do you think, Remy?"
"I don't know.
A couple dozen Double Eagle coins."
This was enough for Tolotra. Eyes narrowed. He nodded sagely.
"Where?"
"Our hotel in Antananarivo."
"You give us coins, you go free."
This was a lie, Sam assumed, but it was a step in the right direction. Even if the worst happened and the kid was unable to intervene here, he and Remy would fare much better moving toward civilization than away from it. No doubt Tolotra's secret place was good enough to keep them hidden from government forces. If, however, Tolotra's discretion overwhelmed his greed en route to Antananarivo, Sam and Remy would find themselves back to square one.
"We go now," Tolotra announced.
Again the group fell into formation with Sam and Remy in the middle. Using their peripheral vision, Sam and Remy kept watch for the kid, but there was no sign of him. Whatever the old truffle hunter had planned, they would have to be ready to react and improvise.
They drew even with the Chevy pickup truck and stopped. Sam and Remy's packs were tossed into the bed. Sam whispered to Remy, "Stay sharp." Tolotra and four of the others clustered around the tailgate and began conversing. The sixth man stood 10 feet behind Sam and Remy, his rifle trained on their lower backs. Based on Tolotra's gestures, Sam assumed they were trying to decide how best to execute the drive into Antananarivo, essentially the enemy's capital. Remy was the first to realize the kid's plan was unfolding. With her eyes, she guided Sam's gaze over the roof of the Chevy and up the middle wise man to the top. At first, Sam saw nothing, and then, almost imperceptibly, a barrel-sized boulder began inching toward the edge. Sam whispered, "When I move, go for the Range Rover." Tolotra turned and glared at Sam. Sam shrugged and smiled apologetically. Remy whispered, "Okay." Atop the wise man, the boulder had reached the edge where it stopped. Sam and Remy took a deep breath, waited. The boulder wiggled forward, paused momentarily, then tipped over the edge and started falling. The pillar's face was a slope, angled slightly backward and smooth save some bumps near the bottom. The combination of the face, gravity, and the boulder's kinetic friction kept it adhered to the face. The engineer in Sam knew that would end as soon as the boulder hit its first bump, at which point the boulder would become a stone artillery shell. Knowing no Malagasy, Sam did what he hoped would cause the most panic. He let out a distinctly un-macho, high-pitched scream, pointed at the boulder, and shouted, "Boulder!" In unison, Tolotra and his men glanced up. Lacking the advantage of the foreknowledge Sam and Remy had, everyone froze and stared in awe. Sam, having kept his eye on Tolotra for most of the hike and having rehearsed his actions, took 2 leaping steps forward, heel-kicked Tolotra in the back of the knee, and as he fell, jerked the Webley Fosbury from his waistband. Behind him, Remy's guard screamed something that Sam assumed was stop, which he further assumed would be followed by the guard drawing a bead on the fleeing Remy. Sam never gave him the chance. With the Webley now free, Sam latched his left hand onto Tolotra's collar and pistol-whipped him in the side of the head. Tolotra grunted and went limp. Sam spun on one heel and dropped to his knees, putting Tolotra between him and 4 other men, 2 of whom were backing across the road, the other 2 scrambling around to the Chevy's opposite side. Sam's spin naturally brought the Webley around to point in the general direction of Remy's guard. As Sam had feared, the man was jerking the rifle up to his shoulder, the barrel tracking Remy as she sprinted toward the Range Rover. Sam fired once, hitting the man in the sternum. Like a puppet whose strings had been cut, the man dropped straight down, dead. Sam wrapped his left forearm around Tolotra's throat, pulled him tighter, then shifted his aim toward the 2 rebels backing across the road. Both had their rifles trained on Sam, obviously trying to decide whether to risk the shot. Sam shifted the Webley's sights from one man to the next. On the other side of the truck, he could hear the other 2 men moving through the high grass along the shoulder. Boom. The ground shuddered, followed by the snapping of limbs. Another shudder, like a giant, was on the march. Sam felt it in his belly. Remy shouted, "Boulder's bouncing!"
"Where?"
"Coming your way!" Boom. Closer this time. On the other side of the truck, the 2 rebels shouted.
"They're running!"
Remy called. The 2 in front of Sam did the same, turning and sprinting back down the road. Boom.
"Hold tight, Sam! It's almost on you! 3, 2, 1!
Sam curled into a ball. Above his head there came the wrenching of steel. Glass shattered. He felt the Chevy lurch to the side, shoving him and Tolotra over the gravel. A shadow passed overhead. Boom! The boulder struck the far side of the road, bounced once, then disappeared over the shoulder, bulldozing trees as it went. After another 10 seconds, the sound stopped. Sam looked up, glanced around. Down the road, the 4 remaining rebels had stopped running. After a brief, huddled conference, they started back toward Sam and Remy. Sam, having watched Tolotra pocket the rover's keys, dug them out. Remy, better start the rover, he called. He tossed the keys up the road, then pointed the Webley down the road and took aim on the four advancing rebels. One of them stumbled sideways, clutched his thigh, then crumbled to the road, followed a split second later by a basso pop. Though Sam had never heard that particular sound, he surmised it was the report of a .455 caliber bullet from a circa 1915 Webley model Mark VI revolver. The remaining three rebels stopped, whirled toward the wise men. A second bullet struck, this one between the legs of the center man. He backed up a few steps, followed by the second man. The third man, however, was a slow learner. Half crouching, his eyes scanning the high ground, he slowly brought his rifle to his shoulder. He got a bullet in the left kneecap for his trouble. He screamed and toppled over. From the direction of the wise men, a disembodied voice shouted something. The two still-armed rebels dropped their guns. Another shout. The able-bodied men helped their comrades to their feet, and the group began limping off down the road. Sam shoved the unconscious Tolotra off him and climbed to his feet. Remy walked up. Together they stared at what remained of the Chevy. Aside from the four twisted stumps that formed the cab, the pickup had been decapitated. A voice called, "Looking at it, you'd think that's exactly what I had planned." A figure emerged from the trees at the base of the wise men and began striding toward them. "Didn't you?" Sam asked the kid. "I'll never tell." Remy said, "You certainly know how to create a distraction." The kid stopped before them. "It was all Mother Nature, my dear. And the luck of the bounce, of course." "Thanks for not deserting us," said Sam. "Don't mention it." Sam hefted the Webley Fosbury in his hand, appraised the weapon for a moment, then handed it to the kid, who frowned and shook his head. "She's yours now." "Pardon me?" "Until today, she'd never been fired. It's a tradition, you see. Chinese, if I recall." Remy smiled. "I think you're thinking of save a life and you're responsible for it." The kid shrugged. "Either way, Mr. Fargo, she's yours now." "Thanks. I'll treasure it." "What should we do with these two?" Sam asked, pointing to Tolotra and the dead man on the road. "Leave them. The sooner you get to Antananarivo, the better." The kid read Sam and Remy's somber expressions. "Don't give it a second thought. They would have killed you." "How do you know that for sure?" Remy said. "In the last 5 years, there have been 63 kidnappings here. Ransom paid or unpaid, not one came back alive. Trust me, it was you or them." Sam and Remy considered this, then nodded. Sam shook the kid's hand, then grabbed their packs from the truck's bed as Remy gave their savior a hug. They turned and headed toward the Range Rover. "One more thing," the kid called. Sam and Remy turned back. The kid dug into his pack and came out with a small burlap bag. He handed it to them. "Truffles for your troubles," the kid said. Then he crossed the road and disappeared into the brush. Sam turned the burlap bag over in his hands. Stamped on the side in red ink was a logo, the letter C, and beside it, in smaller letters, Usler Truffles. Remy said, "That's nice of him. But what's an Usler?"